saw it, Jeremy in Kentucky on Republic Broadcasting Network. Please go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash the donate button, send the fundage, mail your check or money order payable to RBN 2251, Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Call it in to 1-800-724-2719, extension 3, with your debit or credit card number, and we'll be glad to take your money. Keep free speech alive. This is your Monday night broadcast rundown of the news. Joined tonight by Patrick Slattery. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jeremy.
Yeah, I heard your show with Mark Dankoff today. It was very fascinating. And I thought maybe we could do a little commentary and continue on with what's going on in the Middle East, because it's very important. These Jews in Israel, they've been given a carte blanche wrench to completely annihilate the Palestinians. It's quite, is it unprecedented? I mean, have they done this before?
It's not.
I mean, we've seen this 67 war.
It's not unprecedented. Even in more recent times, you had massive orgies of this kind of Israeli violence in 2006 and again in 2009. I remember 2006, you had large-scale bombing of Gaza, and then Hezbollah intervened, and the Israelis turned their substantial weaponry at Lebanon and Beirut, and they leveled big parts of Beirut. But I think in the process, they lost a couple hundred military people. There were easily 10 times that many people who died in Lebanon, and that was after having bombed and killed, well, several hundred, maybe 600, maybe 1,000 or so in Gaza. And then again in 2009, it was after Obama had been elected, but before he was inaugurated, the Israelis were just going from late December, maybe the 29th of December, up until Inauguration Day. They had what they called Operation Cast Lead. And, you know, the pretext they used was that the time that the Hamas had captured one of their soldiers or something like that. I mean, the pretext is always, well, we're retaliating for such and such. And the such and such is always very, very small scale. And the Jewish retaliation, always they're killing Palestinians at a rate way more than 10 to 1. You know, it can be 50 to 1. And it's extremely, extremely always disproportional. And of course, to say one thing is the retaliation, the other thing is a provocation, that just depends on, you know, where you want to set the starting clock and the ending clock. This has been going back and forth. It's been going back and forth, but it's been going back and forth. I mean, so it's not even a matter of who started it, but when you look at it, overall, what's been going on over decades and decades, you've had this steady, non-stop usurpation of land that had been Palestinian, and they're just getting moved off the land very violently. So it's not unprecedented. What is unprecedented? So the Israeli orgy of violence and bombs is not unprecedented. What is unprecedented is the level of damage that Hamas was able to inflict on the Israelis. That's what's unprecedented. And what else is unprecedented is the international environment that has changed so much, where in 2006 or 2009, and there's been other maybe somewhat smaller orgies that have happened since then, there was no restraint on the Israelis. They could do whatever they want. They could act with complete impunity. They can't anymore because the situation's changed. We're not in an era of one superpower. We're not even in the Cold War era of two superpowers. We're in a totally different era. And although the American government hasn't realized it yet, it's a multipolar world, but it's a multipolar world where the dominant force is this Russia-China alliance. They are now the dominant force in international politics, and America and Europe haven't realized it yet. Israel is realizing it this week. So I'll kick it back to you.
That is the thing that has changed since the 90s and early aughts. You know, America was the dominant empire, and that has changed. I would say that the Russia-Ukraine conflict has changed that, the sanctions put on Russia, and the BRICS nations coming together. You got Saudi Arabia coming to the table with Iran. Saudi Arabia, you know, being the ally of the U.S. and Israel, now a dominant player. So you have this much different atmosphere, as you're pointing out, this global atmosphere. And you have many protests all over the globe, pro-Palestinian. Governments of the West are cracking down. I don't remember seeing that in the headlines of the conflicts that you're talking about of 06 in the past. So you get this total realignment politically, where people are basically picking sides, and the traditional left that would normally be pro-Palestinian are being forced into stifling their voices. I don't know, did we have this in the past? Did we have this protest that we see today?
Well, while you had protests, the protests were to no avail. They didn't seem at all threatening. Yeah, there were protests against Israeli actions, but it was almost kind of like a kabuki theater. Not that I've ever actually, not that I know anything about kabuki theater, but people talk about kabuki, and I guess it's just people going through, you know, just playing roles. It's like role playing. What's different now is, that we've gone through these past 3.5 years where, you know, you've had demonstrations, and some demonstrations are allowed and kind of officially sponsored and even astroturfed, like the Black Lives Matter, and they're allowed to get very big and get very violent. And then you've had the demonstrations those are allowed, and those are non-white, right? Non-white demonstrations and white allies, right? But then you've had the white demonstrations, largely white, against COVID measures. Maybe in Canada, there's the big truckers thing. I think there were a lot of Indian truckers. And then also you had the Stop the Steal stuff, and those were cracked down on violently. They've never cracked down on non-white people violently, or at least not in recent years. So if you've got 150,000 people in Britain, largely Muslims, marching in London, that is a kind of threat, because those people have been untouchable, right? They could literally just rape. You had those grooming gangs, which just raped all these young girls, and they were untouchable. So now, like, the pets of the establishment are rising up. The pets of the Jewish establishment are rising up. And I saw a poll today about America. A poll was taken in America, a CNN poll, as I recall, and it broke down support for Israel by generation. Those 65 and over, which would be like boomers and proto-boomers, they were like 80-something percent in favor of Israel. But then as you get younger and younger, you get down to, say, people who are maybe, 25 and younger, and they were maybe only 25% in support of Israel. So things have really changed. And but the other thing is the Israelis themselves, the Israeli society is extremely divided. You have, it's divided in ways that we don't talk about, in ways that, like, I'm not super well-versed in, but I think Israeli society, just a couple of months ago, you had these massive demonstrations against Netanyahu, and I think Netanyahu has become every bit as, what do you call it, dividing. He divides Israeli society the way Donald Trump divides our society. And so he's got strong support from half of society, strong opposition. You got all sorts of people who think he, including in the military, who think he's illegitimate. And you got all sorts of people, because remember, the Israeli military is huge, but it's based on largely on reserves. And so all of a sudden they're calling up, hundreds of thousands of reserve personnel. And these people are saying, wait a minute, they're going to send me into Gaza? I don't want to go into Gaza. You know, it's one thing to just fly and bomb, but flying and bombing, there's a limit to what they can do. Flying and bombing isn't going to destroy Hamas. And going into Gaza, these people are saying, I could go into Gaza in a tank, but they've got anti-tank weapons. So you're having insubordination in the ranks. And there was supposed to be a ground invasion this past week. It didn't happen. They said it's because of the weather. I doubt it. And of course, not only that, but then you've got Hezbollah. And Hezbollah and Hamas are both much better armed and better trained and better equipped vis-a-vis Israel now than they were 15, 20 years ago. Plus, the United States isn't the hegemon anymore. So Syria or Iran would not have gotten involved in 2006 or 2009. Iran's making it very clear that they're ready to get involved. And then finally, before I kick it back to you, President Putin and President Erdogan of Turkey have been talking, and the word is that that Turkey will send a convoy of boats to Gaza to bring in humanitarian aid, but nobody knows what else could be on there. It could be weapons or something. The Israelis would always suspect weapons could be in there. And this convoy would be escorted by the Russian Navy. So then what? So I'll kick it back to you.
Yeah, then you got U.S. aircraft carriers going into the region. In the midst of this, RT reports Biden warns Israel against Gaza occupation. The IDF must eliminate Hamas, but taking control of the territory would be a big mistake. And that's what they've sent Biden out to say. I'm sure he doesn't know what's going on. But his handlers, I'm sure...
No. He doesn't. One funny thing is, he said, "Oh well, they don't need our help. They don't need our boots on the ground. Israel has the IDF is one of the finest fighting forces in the country." Okay, what country is he talking about? Is Israel part of our country? Is that what he means? Does he mean that in Israel, the IDF is one of the best fighting forces, Hamas probably being the best? What does he mean? So I just thought that was funny.
I mean, this amidst great, lack of support for the Ukraine war amongst both left and right in the U.S. So you got that. I looked for them to put a bill out to fund both Israel and Ukraine, and I still look for that. But it's pretty interesting that all countries, U.S. included, the Jews that control the U.S. Administration at this point are sort of backing off a little bit. And that's what it looks like to me. Everybody's sort of backing off. And Israel's sort of just going on this thing of its own with Netanyahu being empowered. That's the one thing that I saw with this thing of Israel being invaded, is that Netanyahu would be empowered. They're actually suspending elections there. I've heard that. Have you heard this? Election suspended in Israel?
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know when elections were due. I think, do they have to have elections at least once every 4 years or once every 5 years? But they're not due for elections. They had a bunch of elections a couple of years ago. I think their last election couldn't have been more than, say, 2.5 years ago. So they're not due for elections anyway. Now, it's possible that elections, that, you know, they had been thinking about having elections in the next few months, and now they're not thinking about it anymore. You know, the cabinet's not thinking about it anymore because they would lose. Maybe they're thinking like that. But they weren't due for national elections. I don't know about local elections or anything, but they weren't due for national elections anyway, unless there's something that I don't know about. Now, one thing that's noteworthy and funny is when this started, Zelensky immediately, you know, you've got Tony Blinken is going to Israel, and I think, the head of the EU, what's her name? Ursula Dandelion. I think she went there. All these people are going to Israel. And Zelensky said, hey, I want to come too. And the Israelis said, nah, it's not, don't bother, don't come. And so Zelensky, all of a sudden Zelensky, he had been the giant hero. He had been Churchill, in a green T-shirt. And now nobody's got time for him anymore. And so the whole Ukraine thing, it's going to fall apart even sooner than it would have otherwise. Things are falling apart for Jewish power. They really are. It's dangerous. It's not like I wish this type of thing would happen, because it's very dangerous. And, you know, there's the Samson option. There's all sorts of things that could happen. Things can spiral out of control. So it's not like I'm gleeful about this, but, it does look like things are just falling apart for Jewish power.
I think we're on the break now. Back on the other side.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
You who turned and you ran. Oh, yeah. Wolves lived right from my hands. Yell, blue on black, tears on a river, push on a shove. Don't mean much. Joker on Jack, match on a fire.
We might still be alive.
All right.
I think we're coming. Hey, Sam, we'll be back. Okay, back on the air. Back to Monday night. In plain sight. Patrick and Jeremy. What did you do to deserve this? I don't know, but you've got it. So, talking about the Israel-Palestinian conflict, I just caught this from Times of Israel. Upcoming elections for local, municipal, and regional councils will be delayed at least 3 months due to Israel's escalating war with Gaza and terrorists. So that's what I was picking up on.
Yeah, okay. Local elections. I don't know about the local elections. The national elections for Knesset, which is what selects the prime minister, I don't think they're due until maybe 2025.
Okay, so I wanted to pick up on this conversation you had with Mark Dankoff today on the temple. This thing, everybody's talking about it. Everybody's talking about the conflict in this region. And, with the U.S. not being a unipolar power in the region anymore, you got Russia and China's input. So what do you think? Is this an opportune time for Israel to push and get that temple that they so desperately desire?
So there you get into that divide in Israeli society. And so there are elements in Israeli society, religious elements, that messianic elements that are really keen. They want to see that build. But remember, Israel, the Jewish state, was founded by Zionists who, by and large, were atheist or at least secular, and they did make what maybe they look at as kind of a deal with the devil. In order to get religious support, they gave responsibility for family policy, including marriage and citizenship. Who's Jewish? Who can immigrate to Israel? They gave it to the rabbis, to the religious establishment, as kind of a quid pro quo, because the religious Jews did not support the Zionist project by and large before the establishment of the State of Israel, because they didn't think you could have a State of Israel that wasn't brought into existence by the Messiah, and David Ben-Gurion wasn't the Messiah. So, and other people could talk more informed about that than I can. But so if you are if you're somebody who made Aliyah and you left Brooklyn or Milwaukee or wherever and you went to Israel and you're living there and you like the weather and you're not particularly religious, do you really want to get involved in a giant war and have your kids or your grandkids go fight religious zealots in the Muslim community because somebody wants to build a temple? No, you don't. And so you've got this giant divide there, which is, because Jews aren't a monolith. Israel's not a monolith. And apparently, obviously, the settler movement, I think the settler movement, the people who actually have established communities in the Palestinian West Bank, and I think their population now is getting close to around 500,000. They have very significant towns and small cities they've built there. They're very religious, and they're very aggressive and militant. And then also you have the half of the population are Jews who are not from Europe. They're not from America. They are Jews from other parts of the Middle East, from Iraq, from Yemen, from Morocco, from Tunisia. and also from Jews who had just stayed in the Palestine area and had always been there. They tend to be more religious, and they also tend to be excluded from power by and large. So, for instance, there was this giant uproar about the reform of the Supreme Court. That's what all these demonstrations were that were going on a couple of months ago. It was about Netanyahu's drive to reform the Supreme Court. And so you had all these people out in the streets in Tel Aviv. Well, what was going on there? Well, the people out in the streets in Tel Aviv were Ashkenazi Jews. They were, you know, from Europe. They're from America. They're more affluent. They're more white looking. And the Supreme Court has 15 seats. 14 of them are Ashkenazi. Now, the non-Ashkenazi make up half the population, but there's just one seat. And so you've got that divide, too. And in the military, whereas the military a generation or two ago was the leadership was all Ashkenazi, and these were people who had learned how to fight in the Red Army or in other armies of Europe. Nowadays, the army is increasingly this Mizrahi, the non-Ashkenazi, and also settlers. Even though the ultra-Orthodox, don't go into the military, but a lot of these militant settlers, they're not ultra-Orthodox, and they do go in, and they're very militant. And so you've got a very fractured society there.
Up on the bottom of the hour break, we'll hit this on the other side with calls. Dead air.
Yeah.
Music now.
Oil-based Zinger paint.
Zinser.
Yeah, I've got a gallon of water-based and a quart of oil-based.
Well, so with the fractures that you're witnessing in your service, the Zinser oil base, which you can get at Lowe's and at Sherwin-Williams, the multi-purpose oil-based primer, interior, exterior, always get an interior, exterior, so that if you have some left over, you can prime exterior surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
So let me give you an example. I painted some door frames that were exterior, and they had previously been painted oil-based. And oil-based is notorious for cracking in the sun and the weather.
Yeah.
So I primed this with the Zinser primer, interior-exterior oil-based primer. Fills in the cracks, let it dry for, 5 to 6 hours. Preferably a day, but if it's in the sun, it probably needs less than that. Sand it down real good, and then you can put whatever top coat on it. You can put a latex top coat.
You can do that on outdoor surfaces too.
Yeah, inside, outside. That's why I recommend the Zinser. It's been in use since the early 20th century. Yeah.
I've been using the water based. I've got a gallon of that, or gallon minus whatever I've used, and then I've got a quart for the oil based,
I don't care what they tell you. The oil sticks better, and it kills the mildew. Any mildew, you can bleach the mildew and sand it down, but the Zinser will kill it and give you a surface that will accept any latex. Top coat.
All right.
But it fills that primer fills those cracks.
Yeah. All right.
So I'm assuming we're on break, but if not, we're giving valuable painting advice.
On break.
If not, we're giving valuable painting advice to all of those listening. Can't go wrong.
All
with
right. Can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'll be doing tonight.
Yeah, so you got some cracked surfaces, huh?
Yeah, I got an old house, and so there's no end. There's no end to this. But I am catching.
Also, most of these old houses, they use oil-based finishes on their woodwork. So you got to prime that with an oil base to put a latex finish on it. We should be coming back right now.
Yeah. It's funny, sometimes stuff chips off and I see the colors that were used before. So many different colors.
Don't breathe it in. Yeah.
It could be lead paint. Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to be.
It's 9:33. You should be back. Sam, let us know if we're back. Otherwise, we're going to tell the listeners how to paint their house.
All right. Okay, well, we're back. I'm declaring us back.
Okay, we are back. the reason I asked this, you have multiple... So you have the Christian Zionists, the Hagi-based people, that want the Third Temple. Like, they want all of this eschatological, these things to happen, because they think that will prompt their Messiah to come. And so you have this phenomenon of Christian Zionists supporting the Third Temple. It's very, very interesting. It's been going on since at least the 70s. Hagee being the spirit of that, but you also have Jack Van Impe. Jerry Falwell. I mean, all of these televangelists really prompted this. It's interesting, Patrick, the phenomenon of Christian Zionists came about with these televangelists, and it correlates with the decline of the Protestant churches in the West, with their acceptance of homosexuals and women as ministers. All of this correlates with the decline of the church. So this Israel worship, this push towards eschatological times, all of this is, comes together with the decline of the church, which I find interesting. Uh-huh. But you could have self-fulfilling prophecies where, in the same way that Jewish power can read the protocols of Zion, of the learned elders of Zion, and they could actually make that happen. I think you see that phenomenon happening. We don't know who authored those books, but it was definitely someone who had a lot of insight. And so whether it was Jews or not, definitely Jewish power is latching on to this. And so you could see them pushing for this Third Temple. And if I understand correctly, it's basically the Sunnis, which would be Saudi Arabia, the Sabbateans, who have been very staunch allies of Israel. And up until a year and a half ago, they were staunch allies of the U.S. that control that mosque there. So it's very feasible for Israel to replace that mosque with a temple and not even have bloodshed. Even though I'm sure they would love bloodshed, it's feasible to have a temple put right beside the mosque. Either one of these scenarios could happen.
Now, of course, that doesn't seem to be the plan. To the extent there's a plan, it seems to be to demolish the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And that's the thing. So if you are the Saudi royal family, the self-appointed protectors of the holy sites of Islam, two of which are, in your body, within your borders, but, the third most important one is there in Jerusalem. What do you do? Do you remain a de facto ally of Israel? Well, they've been drifting away from they've been drifting out of the Zio-American orbit. They're joining BRICS in a month or two. And then you've got Iran, the Islamic Republic. Muslims around the world, maybe they could sit on their hands and stand idly by and watch in 2006 and 2009 these orgies of violence that were unleashed on Gaza But now, when you combine what will have to be an unprecedented level, it's right now it's not unprecedented, this type, this level of bombing. But this level of bombing is not going to satisfy big hunks of Israeli society. So it's not going to satisfy Netanyahu's critics, because always you have to have at least a scorecard that's going to be 10 to 1, if not 20 or 50 to 1 in terms of deaths. Well, I don't know the exact numbers, but something like 1,000, over 1,000 Israelis have died so far. So they're going to, in order to satiate the bloodlust, the bloodlust of so many Israelis, and you're hearing so many Israelis and Jews in America, like, you know, Ben Shapiro and the shills in America saying that Hamas has to be obliterated. Well, you could bomb Hamas, you could bomb Gaza for the next 2 months and kill 20,000 people, and Hamas is not going to be obliterated. They'll still be there. So what are you going to do? They don't want to invade. And if you invade, then Hezbollah gets... Iran can get involved, Syria, Turkey, even Russia. And you know, what increasingly... one thing that's come out of this, and this is what Putin has said, and others have said it, but Mahathir said it, the former prime minister of Malaysia... America has dominated the peace broker's role for almost 50 years now. You know, everything has to go through Camp David. Everything has to go through the White House. Only America can be the broker. They brings together the, you know, Sadat and Begin. It brings together, what's the guy's name? Ehud Barak and Yasser Arafat. And they have their photo ops on the White House lawn, and nothing ever leads to anything. Nothing is negotiated in good faith. None of the agreements, Israel's never held to account. They're never held. They never have to keep their side of the bargain. Never. So, and people are pointing this out. Now you've got China, which brokered a peace between Saudi Arabia and Iran, China in the background and Russia in the foreground. And they are actually in a position, if they so chose, to impose a settlement on these various parties. And it might come to that.
You have this shift toward the powers of Eurasia. I call it a bipolar world with Russia and China being at the top. And the strategic area of the greater Israel being a center point of trade, not only between Europe and Russia and Africa, but between Asia and Europe, a very strategic point. And I think, and this is what I've said before when we've talked, is that Israel has in the past put their fingers in the wind to see which way the political winds are blowing. Right now, they don't seem to be doing that. They seem to be going all out. And it does call for a world power to come in and broker this peace. So that's not going to be the U.S. The U.S. just seems to be sitting on the sidelines, saying whatever Israel is going to do, they're going to do. So
I mean, we've had this kind of conversation in the past, and when we've had this conversation, we've been looking at things in what political scientists call the unit of analysis is the state. We're looking at states. We'll say Israel wants this, America wants that, looking at it as states. And I think right now, that's not the correct level of analysis, because some of these societies, Israel, certainly, and America, and so within Israel, you've got at least two minds, maybe just two. But you know, you've got those who want the temple and are willing to go into some sort of Armageddon type of war in order to get the temple. And then others who don't believe in the Messiah. They don't believe in God. They they do believe in, you know, the specialness of Jews, and you know, they can be, they can be, and typically are, massive.
Oh, you just broke up, man.
Listen. Oh, okay. I broke up here when I was with Cato, too. How about that? Must be a dead zone. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you were talking about the national divide in Israel between the religious and non-religious Jews.
Okay. Yeah, and you hear me okay?
Yeah, yeah. I was going to draw a parallel to the national divide in America, which is very much as distinct. People talking about a national divorce. I wonder if that could happen in Israel.
Right. Who knows? And, you know, within Israeli society, they're okay. So you have the ultra Orthodox who dress in black. And they're often referred to as blacks, right? You hear all this disparaging talk about blacks. Well, they're not talking about Negroes. They're talking about ultra Orthodox who dress in black. The men don't work. They study Torah and Talmud all day, and the women just have pump out lots and lots of kids, and they're economically parasitic. You know, they live off the Israeli welfare state, which, you know, can afford it because it gets so much money from America and Germany and other places. So, you know, you have that type. You also have, you know, these settlers, and there's a certain amount of overlap there, but a lot of the settlers are very militant and walk around well-armed, and they do get into the Israeli military. You got a lot of different types there. And then also, how about the divides in Europe? The divides in Europe between the European Europeans and the Muslim Europeans, who now, I mean, in London has a Muslim mayor. I don't know if, I'm not saying they have a Muslim majority, but they have a non-white majority. And you got these massive Muslim populations in so many of Europe's major cities. So you've got this divide there where how can they tell these people not to demonstrate? I mean, in England, I think the justice minister has said that she's going to deport people who show support for Hamas. Well, good luck with that.
Isn't it what Steinlein warned us about? I mean, invading, he was specifically talking about America, but invading the country with, you know, anti-Semitic Muslims that have no loyalty to Israel. I mean, this is exactly what he was warning against, and it's what, you know, the type of Jews that he represents, what they wanted to avoid, maybe by supporting someone like Trump or by supporting something like Brexit. You know, so I think you have this split in Jewish power where the Jews that did support immigration control are being proven right now. I mean, this is exactly playing out the way that he said it would.
Yeah, well, it is. And, you know, not that Steinlein was our guy or on our side, but I guess he's on the Jewish intellectual A team, right? I mean, they do have smarter people who, even if they're not on our side, they can read the writing on the wall. And you had people like Henry Kissinger, even at age 100, who was able to see that this the Ukraine project wasn't doing Jews any good. You know, Noam Chomsky, a lot of these people, you know, because a lot of the people who are in charge, they're not necessarily in charge because they're the smartest. You know, Victoria Nuland, I'm not saying she's retarded or anything, but clearly her and her allies have poor judgment. They have very poor judgment and poor analytic skills. They're not necessarily stupid, but they're clearly were embarked on this project, which made no sense, and they don't have a reverse gear. And, you know, Israel has got away with this stuff for decades and decades, but it's over. The the game is over. The jig is up, and they can't go on operating with complete impunity like they have become accustomed to. And, you know, if they were smart, they would come to the table and make some sort of bargain. And yeah, they would have to pull those militant settlers out of the West Bank and bring them into the pre-1967 borders of Israel. And I'm sure they don't like living close to those people, but you know, it's their people. They could do that. They could make a deal where you know, they'd have peace treaties and they would be tolerated. But they're going to have to give up stuff. They're never willing to do this. You know, there was a land for peace offer that they put forth. But when you looked at it, they were willing to exchange land in the West Bank that they wanted for land in pre-67 Israel that they didn't want. But even then, you know, they were exchanging prime real estate in the West Bank for desert. In, you know, the Negev desert. But even then, it was only at a 2-to-1 ratio. So you give us 2 square miles of, you know, your most valuable land, and we'll give you 1 square mile in this desert. That's the best deal you're going to get, Goy.
Well, they're not going to come to the table. They're going to keep pushing, and they're going to rely on their Jewish talking heads in the U.S. and in the West to, you know, keep propagating this, and they're going to lose support. They're losing support drastically. I mean, you look at the comments section of Ben Shapiro's online talks, and he's getting totally roasted. Nobody wants this, and I think you are seeing a global pushback.
You are.
So
you're seeing a pushback. Yeah. So you've got the comment sections. You've got the commons in Harvard University, Harvard Commons, Harvard Yard, whatever they call it. And you got these 31 student organizations that came out against Israel. And it's not limited to Harvard. All these woke people that they created, hey, good on them. You know, like if even Ocasio-Cortez, I think trying to be not too over the top and pro Israel, but you got the two Muslims, Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib, and you know, they're not the most articulate people, but they're not backing down. You got this freshman congresswoman named Summer Lee, and she's a black lady. She's not backing down. Maybe she will, but you know, you've got some of these woke people, these squad type people. You've got all these minorities in Europe. Hey, people are just getting sick of this. And then on the other hand, you've got all these Jews, right, whether it's Levin or Shapiro or others, or their shills, who are calling for genocide, saying, you know, we've got to wipe everybody out. These people aren't humans. And this doesn't sound right to a lot of people, a lot of decent people, who decent boomers who always supported Israel because they were supposed to. But they hear this stuff, and it's so over the top. So I think we're really at a watershed moment.
We should be at a break right now. Sam, let us know if we're on the break. And if not, we'll keep talking about Israel and home improvements. Somebody said they didn't know if this was in plain sight or Bob Vila's home improvement hour.
Well, you know, the idea of taking a roller that's got a lot of valuable paint soaked into it and sticking it into the freezer, it's a great idea.
I told you that, didn't I?
You told me that. It's a great idea, but I don't think I could do it. I think, like, you know, my wife wouldn't permit it. She'd freak out if she found, you know, rollers or paintbrushes in the freezer. Well, so I can't do it.
If you're priming with oil-based paint, that Zinsser that we were talking about, that's a very potent, strong oil-based primer. And it's, you know, you would have to buy like $20 worth of thinner to wash it out. What's not worth washing it out when the roller and the brush together costs $10. Just stick it in the freezer.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's good for the next day. The latex, you don't want to stick in the freezer. That'll ruin. Stick that in the fridge. You wrap it in plastic. Yeah. So
I wish I had my own fridge or freezer that I could do this in.
That's, you know, being a bachelor. I mean, that's the thing that I've got. I've got all kinds of paintbrushes and rollers stuck in my fridge and freezer. But
my mom liked bugs, and when she would find, like, she might find a dead bug, but it might have, you know, iridescent. It might be an iridescent beetle, or it might be a butterfly with really unusual wings. And she would put it in a jar and stick it in the freezer. And then people would come over, open up the refrigerator, look inside, and they'd find dead bugs. But, you know, it takes its own, right?
So we should be back after the break. I don't even know if we took the break, but talking about Jewish power, I mean, their own golems are coming back to fight against them. I mean, you know, Frankenstein has turned against its creator with all of these protests going around, and, you know, on the left specifically. I don't see many protests on the right. The right wing seems to be following the Shapiro. I mean, I don't see too many people questioning this total genocide thing on the right. So far, we've addressed the left. Have you seen anything on the right? People on the right saying, no, this is too much. It's a bridge too far. You know, we can't support this. I haven't seen it. Have you seen any protests on the right other than our own camps? And I don't hear you. So I'm going to keep going. I have not. Again, you get into the white nationalist right, and you see many protests. And Patrick's gone. So in the last segment of In Plain Sight, you guys have gotten a pretty good rundown of the Israeli-Palestine conflict. Protests on the left, the division of Jewish power, and you've also gotten a lot of interesting tips on how to care for oil-based rollers and brushes that you may be using, and the use of oil-based paint, Zinsser primer from Lowe's, to prime those old woodworks and cracked walls of plaster that could very well have been painted oil-based and latex won't stick to it. You prime that with oil base, you sand it, you can put whatever top coat you want on it. You've gotten a lot of stuff tonight. I want to just end by saying that, no, there is not really any protest on the right. Pushing back against Shapiro's and your Levin's and all of your Jewish talking heads, this seems to be going forward at a pace that's not sustainable. So what's to come of it? What is to come of it? Well, I think the Jews are going to have to deal with the leftists and the Muslims that they've invaded Europe and the West with. They're going to have to deal with these people. These people are pushing back very hard on what's going on in Palestine. I mean, you've got the news coming at you fast and furious of dead Palestinians, civilians and children. You got the pushback against the 40 beheaded babies. That's been pretty much debunked in the news. And Jewish power has seen probably the biggest pushback that I've seen in my lifetime hitting right now. And so they're eventually going to have to come to a stopping point, or they're going to have to go double or nothing. And I'm saying that these Jews are going to go double or nothing. And then, you know, eventually there's going to be a thing that happens, a final pushback where, like, they can't go any further. Their leftist Muslims and allies that they've put in our countries just aren't putting up with this. So anyway, this at the end of the show, I hope you've enjoyed this Monday night broadcast special Patrick and Jeremy show. Not sure if we had breaks, but you guys stay classy. Tomorrow night we'll do the regular Patrick and Jeremy show. Tuesday night, 9 Central, 1 p.m. Central on Wednesday on the Bugle. You guys stay classy and have a great night.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.